You're catching the drift. Conservative talk, intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings. Join in the conversation. And now, your host, Gary Wellings.
And welcome to the Drift podcast. And I'm going to apologize right now. I'm having a lot of technical difficulties getting this podcast going here. My computer's breaking down. My sound equipment is all foobarred, as they say, and I'm just trying to do what I can. So what we do on The Drift is go over the news that we put on thedailydrift.com and then have guests and commentary and whatever else we can find. So thank you for tuning in, and it's good to have you along. Make sure you're checking out The Daily Drift. It's www.thedailydrift.com. It's the news you need to know. And so we're back in studio and have a great guest, Ash Hampton. Welcome aboard, my man.
It's good to be back again, Gary. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad. It's Friday night, so people know. And luckily, I've got the time off today. You have the time off. And we're going to get to talk a little bit about the Trump rally and the news that's on thedailydrift.com and everything else. But I want to start with the Trump rally. I wanted to go with you because I went a few weeks ago and you were at the one in Battle Creek, too.
Yeah, we didn't even know it. We hung out for a little bit.
Yeah, we didn't even know it. And so you had texted me. We probably got the text at the same time from the Trump campaign, right? And so we wanted to both go. I wanted to, but I couldn't take a day off so quick into the new year. But you went.
Oh, yeah.
And so how did you have to get there in the morning? And I noticed you got inside because I saw you with Rube Raj. So you got inside. How long was the wait?
Well, I got there about 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
Somewhere in between there. And wasn't bad at that point in time in the day. I generally recommend if you're going to go to a Trump rally, get there between 9 and 10 a.m. If you get there later, it's a crapshoot on whether or not you're going to get in because people really do come in. And it's an all-day event, right? The president doesn't get there until after 7. He takes the stage sometime after 7. But it's an all-day, all-Patriots-on-deck event. And it's a beautiful thing. You get to talk to all the people in the crowds all day long. They're great people. You have people buying you coffees, and then you'll go buy them one. True, real patriots. It really gives you a sense of America's back,
right?
And you feel that, and people are friendly, and there's never arguing. There's never people yelling or shouting until we get to the protesters, but we'll get that in a little bit. But, yeah, I got there about 10 o'clock in the morning. I took my son, let him play hooky from school, took my nephew, and took my father, and then Alan Hoover went with us as well. So got in, they opened up the doors about an hour early this time. That's not normal. That's never happened. That was my sixth Trump rally. That's never happened before. But it was kind of nice, right? So we got in about 2:30 in the afternoon, and then got to talk with the media, got to meet Kaylee, Trump's national press secretary. Yep. Got to meet Brad Parscale. That was freaking cool.
I saw the picture, man. He's awesome. If he number one, he looks like a bad SOB anyways, right?
Oh, yeah.
But he's a smart man. This is the guy that really put the campaign over the top last time, and I think he's got it going on this time, too.
You know what? The way he works a crowd, the way he walks, the way he talks, everything about him is set up to add to the Trump brand.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite amazing for people like me who have political aspirations and enjoy the game of politics to watch somebody that's that well in tune with the constituents that are going to vote for Trump. But me and him, we talked for about 5 minutes about cufflinks. I didn't want to talk about politics with him, and I recognize everyone's always talking to him about politics, and you know, it's kind of weird that, you know, but as politically in tune as I am, why do I want to talk about politics with somebody that can absolutely, you know, mop the floor with me?
Right.
So I said, "Hey, Brad." He's like, "Hey, what's going on?" I was like, "I want to talk to you about those cufflinks you were wearing on the big Jumbotron that was out there." He's like, "Oh, I don't know which ones I was wearing. I don't know what clip you're talking about." But then, so he's like, "I got these ones, and I have these ones. I have Republican elephants with little devil horns."
Right. The French cuff shirts are the bomb. I have them, and I so rarely wear anything like that to work because work just isn't dress up, right? I just don't do it there very often. Even though it's a suit and tie, most of us are casual dress.
So we don't. Yeah, and I'm a huge fan of cufflinks and just suits in general. So, You know, I thought, you know, this would be an opportunity to talk with Brad about something other than what everyone else in that room, all them thousands of people, want to pull him aside and talk to him about. And it was funny because he, you know, would answer a question, keep on walking, answer a question, keep on walking. And so I, you know, I said, hey, Brad, I want to know about those cufflinks. He turned around and me and him just sat there and we had a real conversation because for him, I'm guessing it was a bit of a relief to just get to be a normal person for a minute and just have a conversation about something that we both had a bit of an interest in. So that was that was pretty neat.
Yeah,
it was cool. Down to earth person when you actually get to talk to him and get to know him on a different level than that's Trump's campaign manager. And what was even funnier was I was on the floor and he walked past me and I'm like, was that Brad Parscale? Oh, wow, it was. No one else noticed. They had no clue.
Right.
And, you know, so after a few minutes, of course, people started tuning in and, oh, man, that's Brad. Wrong guy. We got to go see Brad. And, yeah, but it was really cool to meet him. It was even cooler to meet Kaylee. She is such a sweetheart, and she's got an amazing
and beautiful
story. Oh, she's gorgeous. I mean, that goes without saying. But she worked that crowd and was interviewing people and just getting to talk with people. And I thought, you know, for the president's campaign's national press secretary to go out there into the crowd still and talk to people and get to hear what they're saying, that's why this president is successful. He's not got stuck in the POTUS bubble.
Yeah.
He's not in the Washington, D.C. bubble.
Yeah, there was a lady I heard on a show on the drive home for me today, and she said the same thing you said a minute ago. She had been to one before he got elected, and she said, not only is it the most fun you'll ever have, it's a sense of unity. The sense that everybody is cool and everyone's together and everyone's friendly, even complete strangers coming together like family. And when I went, because I've only been to the one in Battle Creek, I had the same feeling. There was not a negative vibe from anybody.
It's like a rock concert.
Very much.
America.
Yeah. I said that to somebody later in the week. You know, I said, it's the most fun I've ever had. I'd rather see him than go to a rock concert.
And you feel it in your bones, in your core. And if you're a patriot like we are, you really buy into that. And you know what? I mean, it really, if you take it back and you look at what's happening in the political landscape of today, Abraham Lincoln said it best when he was in the Illinois House of Representatives. A house divided cannot stand.
Yeah.
And this has been the play of the do-nothing Democrats and the liberal, radical leftists that are controlling our country in the deep state. They're trying to divide us. And Trump's message is not one of hate. It's not one of violence. He's bringing us back together.
Yeah.
All walks of life. I stood with minorities. I stood with white folks and men and women, children. These kids were out there. And that's an interesting takeaway, because the only reason we ever met was because my son wore a Marine Corps shirt, and we all know how that went.
Right.
And look at it now, all these years later, and we're still talking about all the same problems we had then, only they're kind of on the mend.
Yeah.
And that's because of Donald J. Trump.
Yeah.
Now we just need to drain the swamp, and we need to get rid of all these do-nothing Democrats that are in office and now trying to strip the president of his powers.
Yeah. And when you talk about that negativity, you know, the divide and conquer, that's what they're doing. They're trying to divide us so they can conquer and control us. And it just drives me insane. Watching him the other night, I just enjoyed it. I'm sure people, if someone had been watching me watch it, they would have said, what do you got that stupid grin on your face for? It's because he's entertaining.
Oh, he's an amazing speaker off the cuff. I do not like it when he speaks to the teleprompter. He becomes dry and stiff. We seen it the other day when he brought up, when he did his presser in the morning about Iran. And he just, whenever he sticks to the message that's wrote for him by all the political hacks that, you know, are inevitably a part of any political machine, it's not Trump. And this is why Trump's tweets, I think, resonate so much with the people, is because there's nobody in that White House that is tweeting on Trump's behalf. Now, I'm sure there are at times, but you can tell when Trump is being Trump. You can tell when it's his tweet, because he tweets like he speaks. And so if you pay attention to how he speaks, you pay attention to these tweets, and the reason they resonate and the reason he resonates is he just makes sense to the normal average American. He's not trying to be polished. He's not trying to be something he's not. He's not trying to be a puppet. He's simply Trump.
Right.
Lewandowski said it best. You got to let Trump be Trump. And when you do that, we win as a country.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how long did he end up talking that one? Because he did almost 2 hours at Battle Creek, right?
I think it was a little bit less than that. Yeah. I actually left a little bit early. My son wanted to stay in there. Alan had some interviews that he was going to be doing But I wanted to see outside because I kept hearing people talk about they were going out the windows and could not believe the crowd size.
Mm-hmm.
Every rally that I've been to, I've never had the privilege of seeing through windows to get to see the crowd size. But unfortunately, the Toledo Fire Department wasn't letting people off the floor, and once you came off the floor, you weren't allowed to go back on, not to use the bathroom, not to go to the concessions. Right. They ended up with a third of the floor last night empty before the president spoke because people weren't allowed back on the floor. They said they needed 5.5 feet of space for every individual on that floor. I think that we probably know where their political leanings were, at least the guy that was in charge of the floor.
Yeah,
exactly. But I'm not going to badmouth our first responders, but somebody made that decision, and it was a poor decision. I've been to six of these, never been the case before. So I just made the decision, you know what, I've been to six of these. I can listen to Trump. I know they have the Jumbotron outside. I'm going to go out there and see what's going on.
Right.
Thousands of people, Gary. Thousands of people in downtown Toledo, Ohio.
In the cold.
Partying, America, Trump. Another decision that they made, and this isn't normal, when Trump was going through and being elected, the protesters, they didn't have the Secret Service backing right away. They didn't have control over the protesters. Now he's the president. It changes. So they usually keep them four or five blocks away from the general area. I don't know who made this decision. Again, I'm not going to go and talk bad about our first responders because, I mean, they put their lives on the line for us every day. But somebody let them, once the rally started, come right up to the corner across from all these thousands of people and start their protest.
Right. And how many?
They had about 40, 45 people out there protesting. So, I mean, decently, but we had thousands on our side, true right. patriots. And I got to be honest, I mean, they were shouting horrible obscenities, flipping us off, calling Trump, you know, Hitler, referring to us as Nazis. I mean, just horrible things. And they're supposed to be the party of tolerance.
Yeah, and I never saw any of that at the Battle Creek rally, did you? I don't think I saw one.
They had three protesters, but remember, it was 20 degrees that day.
That's right. So it was pretty cold.
Their bosses weren't going to pay them to stand out there. They gave them a snow day. Yeah, there's and I've been to enough of these. There's similar faces at each one, and I'm sure that there's protesters on the other side that they're so passionate that they show up. But then I started paying attention, and when they show them on TV nationally, these are the same people. So I believe they're being bussed in. They're paid right. to be there. But it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible to hear some of the things that went. I went Facebook Live for a few minutes, and I actually had somebody, and I want to just clear this up for anybody that follows me on Facebook, said that I accused them of being illegals and jumping the border. Well, no, they were actually chanting that. They were actually telling us that they were illegal citizens and they were here and they were taking our money and they're glad that we're paying taxes for them to get benefits. Of course, they're trying to taunt us. And I responded to it. I didn't do it in a bad way. Everybody knows me and my political ideology. Secure the border. America first. Take care of our own. I welcome people to come in, but they got to do it the right way. But yeah, they were really horrible and rude. Not going to say that we didn't have a few people on our side that may have, you know, had a couple adult beverages and started to get a little out of control at the end. But you know what I noticed, and this is something, a huge takeaway from me. Those police officers, those men and women that put those badges on, put those bulletproof vests on, strap a gun to their hip and go out to work every day, whether they're allowed to say it or not because of their jobs, I'm going to guess not. They support our movement. They support America First. They support Donald Trump. You could see it when I was bantering back and forth with the protesters, because I'm me, and then, you know, I'm not going to waste a minute to talk to a liberal and make them look dumb. So, you know, I bantered back and forth with them, and, you know, they would flip me off, and I'd tell her she was classy. You know, I was like, oh,
that's super classy.
Yeah, that's a real classy move there, lady. You know, but, because I'm not one to sit there and degrade a human being like they do. But especially the big takeaway there is, I'm supposed to be the bigot, right? Isn't that like I'm supposed to not have tolerance for them, but they really have no tolerance for us?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
But then police officers were standing in between us in a street, and they gated them off, and they gated us off, and they put an army of police officers in between us and them protesters. And when I started talking, I seen the police officers nodding a little bit, smiling, winking. They definitely are on our side.
Yeah,
and that's great.
Yeah, there's no doubt that this president and the Republican Party is the party for the police departments. You know, our first responders. It's not the Democrats. It's that negativity. They're the ones that want to see police give up their guns, be taken away, have their power taken away. They're the ones that are out there accusing cops of abusing their power all the time. And it's probably less than a hundredth of a percent those bad cops, because there's not very many of them.
And there are, but I mean, you know what? There's bad doctors, there's bad lawyers, there's bad teachers, there's bad in every profession.
Bad radio hosts?
There's bad, well, you're not, but there is bad in every profession, and we have to recognize that. But it's hard for me to believe that these people wake up in the morning, strap a badge to their chest and a gun to their hip, and want to go out and find violence or trouble. I was talking to a police officer. I had no clue he was a police officer. He was in plain clothes. And I asked him, we were sitting there eating a hot dog hours before Trump got there. I said, you know, are you part of the campaign? You're dressed real nice. You know, it's logical to assume that he's either part of the party, part of the campaign. He says, no, actually, I'm law enforcement. And he said, I don't really like Donald Trump. I don't like his personality. He says, but man, does that guy stick up for me? Does he keep his promises? And I'm not looking for somebody that I like. I'm looking for someone that can do a job and do it well, and that man is it for me. I will vote for him again.
That's awesome.
That's a huge takeaway. Now, my aunt is a state trooper, and I'm not going to say her name because she'll get really, really mad at me. But she said something similar, and she does not like Donald Trump. She doesn't like his personality. But she says, you know, he's got the cojones to stand up for me and my profession, and we're under attack.
Yeah.
And they are. Law enforcement in this country is under attack every day by the liberal left. And these people are just trying to keep us safe. They're trying to give our children a safe passage to and from school, to and from the playground.
Yeah, doing a job for us.
And right? And how
serving
are we paying them?
Yeah, those are our public servants, yeah. and we treat them that way.
You know, I make it a point to thank as many police officers as I can for their service to us. And I don't say thank you for your service. I say thank you to your service to me and my community.
Yeah.
And I talked to several of them last night, and some of them were just amazing. One of them says, you know, I've never in my life been thanked so much by so many people for just being a police officer. I've never felt this before.
That's a difference.
And it's amazing. I said, have you ever been to a Trump rally? He goes, no. He says, I was here a few years ago when Trump was a candidate, but I wasn't allowed on the inside. I was working on the outside. He goes, this is different. He goes, I've never felt this. I've never seen this. In all my years as a law enforcement officer, this is amazing, and it makes me feel so good. This group of people doesn't need police here. He goes, I don't need to be here. No one in this room wants to fight with me or each other.
Right.
He says, you guys are all together, and it's beautiful. It's so peaceful, and it's so friendly, and I just keep getting thanked. And that's a huge takeaway, because that's what America should be. That's what we should want.
Yeah. It's palpable. You can feel it. I mean, it is an absolute feeling when you're in the rally. So I'm going to tell the listeners, if you haven't been, man, you got to go. I mean, maybe you want to wait and go to the closest one when it's a little warmer out. I know I will. I won't think twice about it. Later this year, if he comes to Grand Rapids again, I wish he would come to Detroit, but I know there's logistic issues trying to do Little Caesars Arena or Ford Field or Comerica, whatever.
But boy, could he fill it. If he wanted to,
I think he could.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Any 20, 30, 40,000 stadium, I bet you he could fill Ford Field.
You know where you don't see that, Gary? You don't see that on the other side.
Oh, no.
Any of these 22 candidates that have been running, I know they're starting to drop like flies now, but any of them that have been running, you know, it's like, it's funny. You see these close-up shots with them talking to 10 people.
Yeah.
And they're trying to act like they have enthusiasm. Donald Trump has maintained this enthusiasm since 2015 when he came down that elevator.
Yeah.
Or escalator, excuse me. When he came down that escalator, from that moment on, he has not dropped in energy. And you got to assume that Donald Trump didn't really know what to expect. He didn't think he was starting a movement. He just simply said, I'm going to be me, and I'm going to do what I need to do to try to change this country's course.
Yeah.
And the movement behind him is a real thing, and you're right. You can feel it to the core of your being when you go to these things.
You can.
And every good patriot, even if you're a Donald Trump naysayer, go and listen to your president speak. You're going to walk away with a real sense of American pride.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a couple of Never Trumper friends, and I'm like, man, you got to go.
Listen, if Obama was drawing those crowds, and if he was coming around, I'd probably go listen to him, because he still was my president all those years. I did not agree with his policies. I thought that he was a horrible president. I thought he was a horrible choice. We elected him based on personality and some other reasons that I'm not going to get into, I think. But ultimately, we picked him based on, oh, man, he's a good prom king. Donald Trump doesn't fit that mold.
No.
But boy, does he do what he says he's going to do for the people.
And that's the difference, too, right? For 8 years, people like you and me complained up the wazoo about Barack Obama. But we never were out telling him to be he should be impeached. He should be impeached.
I don't think I ever said that in 8 years. I think that there was a time where I was a little irritated, especially towards the end with the Iran deal.
That's what I was about to say.
I had a lot of problems with that. And, I mean, you know, I'm doing my part now to illuminate that, obviously, for political reasons when it comes to Alan Hoover's candidacy for Congress here in the 8th District in Michigan. But, you know, they sent pallets of cash to our enemies.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? What are you doing? All right, so let's give them the benefit of the doubt. You wanted to give it a shot. You wanted to be Neville Chamberlain. You wanted to try and appease them. Well, you went ahead and gave them $150 billion, $1.5 billion in cash on a pallet, right?
And overnight on a...
Yeah. On a plane. And even John Kerry said, yeah, some of it will probably end up in terrorist hands. Well, hello, did it work? Did they ever stop being mean to us, trying to attack us, kill us?
They paid for American lives to be lost. That's what they did.
Exactly.
You cannot appease a terrorist, and you cannot take someone who has an ideological war against you and change their mind.
Yeah.
You can't do it. Peace through strength is the only way to do it. We sent such a message to the world with General Soleimani dying. And you know what? Good riddance to him.
Yeah.
That's another terrorist piece of filth off the face of this planet, right. And the world is a safer place because of Donald Trump's actions.
Yeah.
And that's a fact. And what do the Democrats do? They turn into Iran's PR team? That's what they did.
There was a meme on Twitter. Some guy said, if someone had told me, you know, even a year ago, that Donald Trump would have had the Democrats complaining about a guy killing a shooter at a church, complain about and protecting a terrorist, right, who got killed, he wouldn't have believed it. But that's what they do on a regular basis. The Democratic Party is so they hate Trump so much.
If he cured cancer, they would say that he was an evil racist for curing cancer. They really would at this point. And it's so sad to our democracy, Gary.
It is terrible.
And here's the truth. I am good for debate, and I happen to be somebody that on some of the social issues, I could get on board if you could find a logical way to pay for some of the programs you want.
Yeah.
So I'm not completely so far to the right that you can never be, you know, something that I can get behind. But that's not what they're doing. They have no message. They have no vision. Their only thing that they have is hatred. They have hatred for us, our way of life. And we've got to just put an end to it. I mean, Americans got to wake up and they got to quit voting for these people based on name recognition. They have to quit voting for them because, oh, I met them once and they were so lovely. That doesn't matter. That doesn't make them a good leader. Doesn't make them a good resource. And it surely doesn't make them good conduit to be your voice.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's change gears because we had a lot go on in this last week.
So did we.
With the drone strike that killed Soleimani and Mattis or Hamat, whatever that guy's name from Hezbollah, and there was a third one. Those kind of got brushed aside, but the drone strike came, and it was pinpoint accurate. Our military was dead on the money. They got him out. He was within Iraq, in Baghdad, so I don't want to hear this assassination stuff. Here is a designated terrorist.
And he was designated.
Therefore, designated by Obama.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with what they're trying to say it is. He killed a top-ranking Iranian official. No, he killed a terrorist.
Terrorist.
Absolutely. Who Barack Obama designated as a terrorist.
Yeah.
Who we could have taken out in 2015, by the way, but somehow or another, the Iranians got tipped off that Israel was going to act. We ridded the world of a terrorist. And you know what the president doesn't need? He doesn't need congressional approval.
Right.
To take out a terrorist or to keep America safe. He's the commander-in-chief for a reason. His job is to keep us safe, and that's exactly what he did. He kept us safe. And what do? They lose their minds. My favorite meme of the week was Donald Trump and a picture of him in basically like the Bugs Bunny magician outfit. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes, and for my next trick, I'm going to make the Democrats defend our enemies. And boy, did they.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, they did. They defended our enemies. And for what?
I want to know what really goes through their minds. Are they that psychotic, that mentally warped, that they believe their message? Or is this just they're so power hungry they need to get rid of Trump at all costs?
Well, I think they already know that they lost. I think that they know that their investigation after investigation after investigation is a total failure.
Yeah.
I think that they know they have no vision. I think that they know that they're losing the blue-collar workers because Donald Trump's put them back to work. Mm-hmm. And so I think they just don't have a choice but to spew more venom and at all costs not give Donald Trump a real W for the American people. They can't get out and say, good job, Mr. President.
Yeah. Hey, I want people to take away, because I put this out on Twitter this week, too, especially after I watched Trump, right? So I was tweeting while he was talking in Toledo. This guy is working his tail off for us. The Democrats want to say he never does anything except for himself. That's nonsense. This is a guy who gave up millions of dollars to become president, doesn't even take a salary, all because he loves the country and is working for us, the average American guy.
Like, what's the rules? He has to take $1 a year or $1 a quarter or something like that.
Yeah.
That's his rules. He donates all the money. He just donated his last quarter to opioids.
Yeah.
But let's be honest. What does Donald Trump have now? Now, I've heard this a lot from them, that he became president for his own ego. Well, Donald Trump had a lot more power when he wasn't president and he was paying off politicians, because that's the way the swamp works, right?
Yeah.
Someone with his much money pays them and they do what he wants.
Yeah.
He didn't have to take any flack for it politically. He didn't have to take any personal flack for it. He paid them a check.
Mm-hmm.
They did what he wanted. And let's be honest. Let's just really break this down. What's better? Trump Tower? Or the White House? What has better technology? He's got rooms literally gilded in gold.
I know. Because that's not me. He is gaudy like that. And I went, oh, I could not live like that either.
Would you rather live at the White House or Mar-a-Lago?
Oh, yeah. This is
two of some seven homes, ten homes that he
has. Mar-a-Lago is a much better neighborhood, I'll give you that.
Yeah, like legitimately, and the weather is a lot better too,
right? Oh, my gosh.
So, let's talk about Air Force One. What's better, that or Trump's plane?
Mm-hmm.
Trump's plane has golden seat buckles. What's better? Now, don't get me wrong. Air Force One is most likely technologically advanced beyond all belief compared to Trump's plane.
Yeah.
But as far as creature comfort of a billionaire,
it's
better.
I'm sure it's way dated compared to what Trump's used to.
And he put the twilight of his life on hold. Let's be honest. Trump's not a spring chicken. He's 70-something. I'm not really sure. But the twilight part of his life, he put on hold to make the American people's lives better. That's commendable to me.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about that often. What did Donald Trump gain by being president?
He's lost
money. He's lost billions. He's not in charge of his.
This is the first president to lose money being in office.
And here's why. They're like, oh, well, his kids are making all the billions now because, he can't have control of his company while he's. Yeah, but he is the Trump brand.
Mm-hmm.
He created that brand.
Yeah.
And so without him behind the wheel of his own company, his company is going to suffer. And he did that for who? Not for his kids' sake.
Did it for you and I, brother.
That's it.
Did it for you and I.
God bless him and God bless the United States of America. And he's kept his promises. Yeah. That's important.
So he makes this decision to snuff out a human being. And I'm sure that is not an easy thing to do. Even as president, even though he's not the one pushing the button or pulling the trigger, he had to make a decision. I'm sure that was not an easy decision for him to say, I'm going to take a man's life right now with the decision I made. And he ended up taking however many were in the convoy, right? Got to be a tough thing. But he goes on, and they yell at him for eating dinner, for having ice cream. This is a guy who made a crucial decision for us, to make all of us safe, and yet you're going to complain about him making that decision because he decided to kill a terrorist?
And let me explain. I have a unique position on taking life, obviously. I'm a United States Marine. I'm a combat veteran. And I recognize that I had to throw my morals, my ability to be a good moral human being, kind of out the window to be successful at this game the government calls war. So I have a unique perspective on what it takes to take a human life, and I recognize that it's something that we all possess if we have to, and thank God the government put a lot of resources into training us how to do it, and if you're a good moral sound person, you can recognize there's a light switch. You can turn it on. You can turn it off. Right. Trump doesn't have that light switch to turn it on, turn it off. We've seen that when they took our drones out.
Yeah.
Donald Trump stopped the attack in progress. The planes, turn them around. Turn them around now because 50 lives were going to be lost. And he felt that those 50 lives weren't worth our $100 million aircraft that they shot down.
Yeah.
That's the type of person Donald Trump is. He's not aimlessly just trying to kill people. He's not trying to be a warmonger. And I don't believe that you know, and I tend to be a little bit more into the ideas of, no, let's go over and turn them into a glass parking lot. I'm done playing with them. They've been fighting for thousands and thousands of years. Personally, take those big, beautiful bombers, drop a nuke or two, and be done with all of it. I'm at that point half the time. And I know that that's not always the popular answer, but that's where I am at. But no, he's measured. He's reserved. He made the right choice. He was going to turn the planes around when the collateral damage was too high. This time, I mean, he literally dropped a bomb on this guy's lap. He dropped a missile on this guy's lap, pinpointed accuracy. And this is honest to God. I talked to the Washington Post yesterday, and he couldn't believe my take on the Middle East when he asked me, and that's what they wanted to talk about. And I told him very, very clearly, we bring our people home. Let Iraq kick us out. Mm-hmm. We've done our job for them, and we've rebuilt their infrastructure, and we've given them billions and billions of our tax dollars to fix their problems, and they're an oil-rich country. They can come out of this on their own if they want.
Right.
If you don't want our help, great, because you surely aren't paying for our help anymore. And strategically, we don't need boots on the ground. We live in the world of drones. We live in the world of aircraft, and we can take you out. Have you ever looked at the military powers next to each other?
No.
Iran has like 1,000.
Oh yeah, I saw the meme earlier today. Yeah,
we've got
13,000 aircraft versus 500 that they got.
It's so ridiculous.
The quality difference.
And we talk, and let's just take it a step further. It's not just Iran. What else do we hear about? We hear about China. We hear about Russia. We got 27 carriers to their one or two.
Yeah.
They're not a threat to us. The problem that we have is America gets itself into conflict after conflict after conflict. We're spread so thin across the globe. Bring our boys home. Let's have technological warfare. We have the drones. We have the aircraft. Yeah. We can do it. And Donald Trump, I think, takes it a step further. He understands economic warfare.
Yeah.
You want to cripple your enemies, stop their dollars from flowing in, and they will no longer be able to fund their wars. And that's what Donald Trump is really good at, recognizing economic warfare.
Yeah.
That's where we should be. Bring our boys home.
So, which puts us to another thought here. So we go ahead, and Donald Trump makes a decision. We strike Soleimani. We kill those guys. And now, of course, everybody's crying and whining that the guy who, like you said, was so tolerant and so patient. I mean, Saudi Arabian oil fields hit, more tankers hit, and he did nothing until he drew the line in the sand with an American life. You killed an American. You now attacked our embassy. It's time, you know.
Yep, absolutely.
So what are our choices once they retaliate? Well, they did retaliate. And this is where I'm...
Did they really retaliate?
Well, that's why we're going to jump in. I love me a good conspiracy, right?
Oh, good. So, I got a couple for you here.
So on now we get 48 hours later, we get 15 ballistic missiles, short range, come out of Iran, launched from Iran at our air bases. And those are, were the SS-20s, did you ever see what ballistic missiles they were Russian?
I didn't. I do know that they were between 1 and 2,000-pound warheads on them, and that's all that I have been able to find out about them. But I haven't looked at what they launched at us. I looked at how they launched. And that, you know, they hit Al-Assad. Guess where I was stationed when I was in Iraq? Guess where my firm base was? Al-Assad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when I seen that map, boy, did it bring back memories. And I know exactly where they hit, and they didn't try to hit us. I'm sorry, they didn't. They've taken out Saudi oil fields with those same weapons. They didn't try to hit us.
It almost made me wonder, was there really the full warhead on it, or was it deactivated? Was there something else went? Because I'm in the same boat as you. I'm thinking, you know what? You guys have been accurate in the past. Did you make a decision? Did they even make a phone call back channel behind the scenes and say, we have to strike back at you? This is what we're going to do. We will do the minimum damage, blah, blah, blah. Was there a back channel phone call made and somebody in Washington, president or otherwise, said, we understand you need to save face? I don't know that this happened. I'm just saying. You know, go ahead. You need to save face in front of your people because you know what? We're not into regime change. We're not into war. We don't want all that. But you guys were putting us in a position. We're drawing the line. You crossed it.
They did. And so there are some speculative reporting around this that there was a phone call made that we were tipped off and we were able to move our
move our
assets out of the areas where these bombs were going to hit. And let's be honest, right? Iranians are like as clandestine as North Korea. They have state-run news. They don't really get our information. They block our internet feeds. Even if they have Twitter, they don't have Twitter outside of their own country. So all they get is what the regime tells them. So that's exactly what I think they did. They said, okay, we have to do this because otherwise we're going to lose our power. And any good dictator like the Ayatollah knows that you have to maintain control and you have to maintain this certain level of we are the most powerful, but you're not. And the world knows it. Sadly, your people don't know it, and they should, because before they took over in the 70s, I mean, you had a lot of freedoms in Iran.
Oh, yeah.
If you look at some of the old pictures, these ladies had hairdos that were just as good as any Western civilization out there. They had freedoms in Iran until these radicals took over and changed their landscape. So that's exactly what I think happened. So then, now, I want to take your conspiracy theory a little bit further. They expected Donald Trump to hit and hit hard and fast, just like he said, but Donald Trump's playing chess with these people, and they're busy playing checkers or, I don't know, tic-tac-toe, pick it, I don't know, care, I don't really care.
Right.
But, I mean, truth be told, a Ukrainian aircraft carrying no Americans, but Iranians and Canadians.
And Ukrainians.
And Ukrainians goes down just around the same time.
Yeah, a couple hours later.
So this is not my conspiracy, but I heard it on the radio today, and I just want to float it out there. Did Iran purposely shoot that down, expecting that Donald Trump was going to retaliate, and they were going to be able to take the footage because it was videotaped, and we see the plane being blown up. We see something hitting in the sky, and we see the plane coming down in another video, thinking that they would go send it to their deep state leftist radical swamp that has become their new hired PR firm. And oh my God, Donald Trump attacked Iran and killed innocent civilians. Oh my God, it's the end of the world.
Right.
Is there a plausibility there that they did that on purpose? Because why would they take out that airplane? But at this point, we know that there was a surface-to-air missile that took out that airplane.
It's
no doubt about it when you see the videos.
Yep.
And of course, they're denying it. They're denying that there was a mistake made, blah, blah, blah. But they won't return the black boxes. But we have the videos, and seeing is believing.
Yeah.
So I know what I seen. I seen something strike that aircraft, and I seen that aircraft come down in pieces. It didn't come down whole. It came down in pieces. And I'm wondering if that was their play, right? But Donald Trump's playing
possible.
Playing That's checkers, possible. And they're over there playing tic-tac-toe, and they didn't catch it.
I kind of prefer to think that, you know, there was a gunnery crew in that surface-to-air missile site, and they either had it on an automatic or somebody was just itchy trigger finger, right? Oh, there was a plane in it. Hit the button. Oh, no, it was taken off. It was one of coming out of our.
My only thought with that is they are close to an international airport. Like, so that air traffic should be somewhat normal. This happened
minutes
after it came off. So that's where I'm like, was this more calculated than that?
So let me ask you this. Here's the real question. Is that missile crew alive or dead today?
Oh, well,
I'm betting that missile crew is dead. If they're not in a deep cell somewhere, they've already been eliminated.
That brings me to another meme, and we always talk about our memes that we see through the week. Did you see the one of Kim Jong-un saying, what does Iran have that we don't have? He goes, would you like me to kill your generals too? He goes, no, I already did it. That was my favorite Kim Jong-un meme of the week.
Well, and that goes to point, right? This is also making a point to Kim Jong-un. You know what? You're never out of reach.
Correct. Right?
We see you. We know where you're at. We can do whatever. You're never out of reach. Yeah,
if you think about it, they didn't take out... Well, first of all, Soleimani was smart. He traveled commercial air, so they couldn't take down the airplane.
Right.
So they had to wait for him to get out. But we have the technology to where they could not only verify exactly which vehicle he was in, but see him in the vehicle, know what seat he was in that vehicle.
Yeah.
They pinpointed him, and he, to be quite frank, he really fell apart in that whole situation.
There's another meme I won't go into that Yes, there wasn't a whole lot left. And when they put him on that cardboard box that took up three seats of the coach, why did they fly him home coach class? Come on, a big hero like that, you think he'd be up in first class anyway.
Right, you know, yeah. I'm going to leave it alone.
Yeah, just amazing to me that, then again, you're now seeing it, and I think you're going to see more of it over the next week. You've already seen some of the celebrities come out and say, well, we're the ones responsible for that American or for that Ukrainian plane being shot down. If we hadn't killed Soleimani and had that response, it's our fault. Are you kidding me? How do you dare blame that on America, too?
It's our fault for every person that ever jumped off a bridge, because had we not built the bridge to get over that water passage, they wouldn't have had a bridge to jump off. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
It is.
You can't blame us for the actions of others.
No.
And you know what? We didn't drive these tensions up. We didn't attack our own embassy. We didn't do that. And unlike Benghazi, our president had the guts and the fortitude to send Marines in instantly. He talked about that last night at the rally.
I saw it. Yeah.
He said, no, get them in the plane. Get them in the planes now. We can have them there in the morning, sir. No. Put them in the planes now. Yeah. Get them there now.
I'm sure
this will be no Benghazi.
Yeah, he probably had the air support and everything else overhead within minutes.
Right? You know, it was interesting. I was talking to Alan, and obviously we know that I'm going to plug Alan anytime I can here, being his spokesperson while he's making his run for Congress. But did you know that Alan, while he was in Burundi, that he was one of those forces as the Marines that had the option to get to Benghazi? He was one of those assets that we could have got there in time, and they told him to stand down, and he's verified that. No, they told us to stand down. We were well aware of what was going on at the embassy. We were one of the teams that were ready to go in there, and they told us to stand down. And that's the difference in leadership. And this is why you should always vote for somebody, not based on their personality, but based on the ability to do their job, keep us safe, make America prosper, and ultimately keep our union together, because at this time it's fragile.
Right. Yeah, we're here with Ash Hampton, communication director for Alan Hoover, who is running for my congressional district, 8th district. And you got a website you want to point
people
to?
Yeah, so, you know, listen, first and foremost, Gary, we have to stop the madness in this country. We absolutely cannot continue the way we are. Our congressional representatives are no longer representing us. They're taking special interest and big lobbyist dollars and doing what they say and telling us how to live. And we have to change that in this country. Our representatives are supposed to be our voice. Alan Hoover is planning on doing just that. He's been a Marine for 20 years. He's a gunnery sergeant in the United States Marine Corps, which is even better. He's not an officer. He's somebody who has worked boots on the ground from the enlisted ranks and made it to gunnery sergeant. 20-year Marine Corps combat veteran, 5 deployments, been in 19 different countries. He's seen it all. And he can't stand here any longer and watch our country treat us like second-class citizens. So go to AlanHoover2020.com. That's AlanHoover2020.com. Contribute, help, sign up. We need all the help we can. We're in a fight against Alyssa Slotkin, operative for the CIA deep state.
Right.
That is part of the problem. She was Obama's assistant secretary of defense to the foreign relations side of things. She was complicit and complacent in the knowledge of that $150 billion. She was probably part of the decision-making to not take out Soleimani in 2015.
Yep.
There's no way, as assistant secretary of defense, that she wasn't aware of these things. And she was sent by the deep state and the Washington elite to come over here, come to Michigan, a place where she's never voted as an adult, never lived in her adult life, took all the money from the deep state and California and the Washington elites, came here and stole our voice.
Yeah, she's the classic carpetbagger, right? A Nancy Pelosi plant controlled by the Democrats. All the money came from the Democrats and outstayed. This wasn't a grassroots campaign that put her into office.
Absolutely not. She didn't even know her district lines. And the reason she was able to beat Representative Mike Bishop was because she used her military prowess. She acted like she's a veteran. She's not a veteran. She's never signed her name to give her life to this country like every good veteran has. That's something that's symbolic and should not be used when you weren't it.
Right.
Alan Hoover was it. He was the real deal. He was over there in Iraq at the same time as her. And we need somebody like him. Look, we have 4 other great patriots that are running in this race for the Republican nomination. I've met them. They're great people. But they can't beat Alyssa Slotkin. Alan Hoover's the only one that's positioned to be able to beat her. And that's because he can call her out when she says, I'm CIA. He's going to say, no, you're a political analyst and a pencil pusher. You may have been issued an M4. I was trained how to use it, and I was the one on the front lines while you were over there telling them these ROEs that are getting my men killed. I was over there trying to figure out how we could have a proper battle around your ROEs so we could keep Americans safe and we could get our mission accomplished.
Yep. ROEs, that guy. ROEs, for those who don't know, rules of engagement.
Right, which is the way that we operate. And I'm sorry that I always go back to military terms, but that's the way that we operate. That's our law and our rule for how to engage the enemy. People like her put lives at risk, and she's proven it over and over again. Not only did she help get that $150 billion over to Iran, she applauded the decision. And she also came out and she spearheaded this crap about taking presidential powers away to be the commander-in-chief based on her military experience. Once again, she was not in the military. She is not a veteran. She's deep state CIA sent here by Washington cronies to take your voice. That's why we have to put Alan Hoover in the front line. We have to make sure that he's our conduit to be our voice in Congress and restore the Americans' people their representation. We no longer have representation. We literally had a whole Boston Tea Party about this and created a whole new country based on not having representation in your federal government. We don't have that today. We need to restore it, or we're on the brink here, Gary.
Yeah, and Alan's just a great guy. We had him on for the full hour a week or so ago on the show, and you can go. It was a December 31st show. You can catch it on podcast. I think I've still got it pinned to my Twitter account, so you can see it right at the top of the page, or you can go to www.thedailydrift.com, click on the Common Sense Radio tab up in the corner, and scroll down. You'll find it right there. So,
and get involved. We need patriots, and this isn't just for Alan's race. This is our whole country. We need to drain the swamp. We need to get rid of the deep state.
We do.
And the Washington elites, and we need to take back control of the government that was framed by the founders to be of, by, and for the people.
Yeah. Now, you're a downriver guy, so Debbie Dingell's your congressperson, right?
Sadly.
And I'm from downriver. I grew up downriver. I lived there.
Someone needs to take her out
life,
one day. You all run against her, take her out of office. She doesn't belong.
Somebody,
there.
Please. I don't care if it's a Christian Democrat, a moderate Democrat. Somebody, please, step up. Or better yet, a Republican, a conservative, or independent, somebody step up down there and run. Well, I'm looking at you, too. Like, dude, wait, hello?
Well, here's the bottom
line. I can understand. You're not in a position yet. But yeah, in the next couple of years, bro, somebody needs to step up down there.
We'll see what happens when it comes to me, right? I mean, first and foremost, I'm an American patriot. I love this country. I would give my life to it today just like I would yesterday. I love the idea. This is the greatest social experiment the world has ever seen, and we must preserve it. People like Debbie Dingell are only in her position because she married someone in that position who happened to be gifted that from his father when he passed.
Yeah. It's that dynasty stuff.
And I'll
just
be very honest. I knew John Dingell. I've met John Dingell. He's actually a really nice guy, and he is not what the liberal left are today. He was a big 2A guy. He believed in this country. He believed in our troops. That's not his wife. That's not her positions. That's not Alyssa Slotkin's positions neither. You know, I have a letter because, you know, as we're knocking on doors and talking with people, she's upset a lot of people in her district. So she is in trouble. And that's a fact. No, she is. And that's a fact. I'm talking to people every day in your district, knocking on doors, meeting them, greeting them, listening to them. Well, this guy sends her, Alyssa Slotkin, a letter about 2A and universal background checks, which is a big joke because, to be quite honest with you, everybody that purchases a gun has a background check done, but no one talks about that, truth be told. And now there are a few loopholes. I get it. So this constituent writes her a big, long letter, and she responded with a big, long letter. Only this is what she said. I'm sorry we don't meet eye to eye on this subject, but I believe. Stop! It's not what you believe. It's what we believe. You're supposed to be our representation.
Yes.
I don't care what you believe. I don't care if you like cream in your coffee or you like sugar. I really don't. I want mine black, and I want it now. That's the fact, right? Listen to what I'm saying, because you're supposed to be me.
Right.
You're supposed to go there and represent my values and my district and my communities. And that's not what she's doing. She's telling you how to live.
Yeah.
And Debbie Dingell does the same thing. The only problem with Debbie, and this is what really irritates me, she is the most in position politician I've ever met in my life. She never, ever, ever makes a public statement for or against anything. She always comes out with the same baloney. Well, I'm going to weigh the facts. I'm going to look, and we're going to make an informed decision. And then 99.9 90% of the time, she sides with her party.
Yeah, she does what Nancy Pelosi tells her to do. It drives me crazy that all our TV stations here in town, Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 7 for Southeast Michigan, they're always so pro-democratic. They're always so
pro. I don't know if they are when you talk to them personally. I had the pleasure of meeting a great person, and I'm not going to say his name right now.
I know who it is, too.
But wow, did I have a completely different perception of that man after talking to him like a human being instead of just seeing him on the TV.
Well, they've got to keep their jobs, and their stations are liberal-minded stations.
Well, this is the problem, right? Because we don't have state-run media, so we don't end up with the problems that North Korea has or that Iran has, to where people get real information, but we've set up a system and allowed for the lobbyists and the big money Soros and company to swoop in and steal our free press.
Yeah.
They stole it. They are no longer
a free press.
Yeah, they're not objective.
They're bought press.
They're not objective. They don't have objective journalism. Yeah, they're not journalists.
Even the Detroit News, which is supposed to be our conservative Detroit newspaper, it's so far to the left from 30 years ago. It just drives me insane. I wouldn't read the Detroit News for anything. Don't give it to me for free. I'll throw it out. I'm not reading it.
And they trick Americans, right? Because they talk about the fact that we have a free press, but they're not free. They're not free to talk. And they're not. And after talking with a couple of them yesterday, now there's one other thing I got to bring back to the Trump rally here last night, because I thought it was amazing, and Trump didn't see it. And I think if he did, he would have said something. America's Voice, that network, I don't know if you're familiar with it. Guy on there, Rob, awesome individual. And I got to throw him a plug real quick, because awesome individual. As Trump did the normal and is calling out those lying fake news media organizations, that man went into his pocket, took out a MAGA hat, and put it on his head and said, them, and pointed at them all. Yup, me, nope, and just thumbs up the crowds. He was proud to stand there in that media dais with a Keep America Great Again hat, or Keep America Great hat, and it was a beautiful thing. I got pictures of it. I'll post them on my Facebook, because I think that he needs some real recognition. Awesome individual, stands up for his beliefs, and he doesn't care if he loses his job over it. And we need more of that in the media.
We do. We do, indeed.
And I don't care what your political affiliation is. I just want you to give me facts so I can decipher and decide for myself.
Yeah.
Because America's not stupid. We're smart.
Absolutely. What else did we want to cover here? Because we're going to be running back to the last couple 10 minutes here of our show. We covered Alan. We covered the 2020 for your neck of the woods. Oh, that's what I was trying to say was, people, you've got to get out. We can't just reelect Donald Trump and expect to get what we need to get done. We need to get the House. And I'm crossing my fingers. I'm praying to God. I don't know that it could happen. Can we get a supermajority in the House? Can we get a supermajority in the Senate?
See, I don't even know if that's enough anymore, because what we really need is we need a true political movement, just like Donald's Trump's and the Keep America Great movement, or what was the Make America Great Again, which he has done, because promises made, promises kept, and he has kept those. And if you look at our economic scale, if you look at our unemployment numbers, if you look at GDP, if you look at every great mark, our military, the strength of our military, but I don't know if that's enough.
Right.
I think that what we really need to do is have the same movement within Congress and put like-minded people. It can't just be just because you're a Republican.
Right.
It has to be because you believe that the swamp needs to be drained. You have to go to Washington with the idea to fundamentally change the way Washington does business, and then the fortitude to stand up to the lobbyists and the special interests that try to get their claws into you once you get there. I believe that every person goes to Washington with the best of intentions. Then they get there, they get infected with swamp fever, and it's a crapshoot from there, and then they don't keep their promises. We need real American patriots. I don't want doctors. I don't want lawyers. I want people that are just like me. I want my neighbors to run. I want my friends in my community to run. I want pastors to run. I want people that have true conviction to run. Because if we don't get back to that, at least in the House of Representatives, we're never going to be represented again. And that's what we really need. Supermajority, I don't know, because I'm looking for a very set type of person to be my representative. Yeah. And if we don't get that, then Donald Trump's never going to get it done. Look at the way that the Republicans, like Paul Ryan, handled Obamacare and the reversal of it. And look at what John McCain did at the end and walked in and made the deciding vote in the Senate to finally repeal. But let me ask you this, too, and I have to say it, because if we as Republicans, if we're not looking at what we've done wrong as a party, then we're not growing either. And you can't argue for 7 years that you want to repeal and replace Obamacare, and then you get it to your to the goal line, and you're like, oh, well, we don't have an idea. We don't have a clue at how to do it.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, how can you talk about it for 7 years and not have a deal? So we need people that are very much impervious to swamp fever to run for office.
Yeah, and I don't know how we get around that other than what we always get people talking term limits and whatnot. You know, one of the things that I would rather see even than term limits is not being able to run consecutively.
That wouldn't be a bad idea, because and I'm a fan of term limits, and I but that makes sense too, because maybe it isn't term limits. Maybe it's just fresh ideas and a constant revolving door.
The revolving door, ideas. I think it is, right? The other part about not running consecutively for me is you go in for 2 or 3 years or 4 years, whatever your term is, you've got to come home and live what you did. You know what I mean? You got to come home. And then the second thing is, I'm not paying you while you're out campaigning.
Well, yeah, because right now they don't have to live with what they did.
Right.
They make themselves impervious to their own laws. Look at Obamacare. They don't have to deal with the woes of Obamacare like we do.
Because they've got their
own
thing.
They didn't lose their plans. They didn't lose their doctors.
Yep.
We did.
Yeah.
Greatest lie of our lifetimes from an administration was Obamacare.
Yeah.
What a falsehood.
Yeah.
You can keep your doctor. You can keep your plans. It's going to be better. It's not even better for those that couldn't afford it before.
Yeah.
Once you go to use it, you can't afford it no more.
So let's stay on track for this last thing that I want to talk about is the war resolution that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats and a couple of Republicans
passed. Three, right?
Three. And one of them, surprise of all surprises, caught me off guard.
Gates.
Matt Gaetz, right? Now, I understand. It caught me off guard so much that I retweeted something he did, and then I'm like, oh my God, what did he just say? I had to go back and take another look at it, right?
Yeah, that one caught me off guard too. I wasn't expecting
it. And so I reserved my judgment. I went and listened. I know where he's coming from. He's coming from the point of, we don't want any more long-term, you know, wars like Trump doesn't, right? And that's what but my thought to him is, dude, you picked the wrong time to go on a technicality and try and prove a point. Because
yes,
you know
he
what?
Did. And he might have cost himself his seat on that one.
Very well, man, because the blowback on Twitter is huge.
And he was climbing. His Republican stock has been climbing and climbing throughout this impeachment farce.
Yeah.
And people have really been listening to him, and he's become a real Republican powerhouse.
He's become a rock star for that, yeah.
And he blew it.
He blew it. The optics were terrible. The timing was bad. I know where he's coming from.
Well, I get it, too. I got it too,
but just, bro, you picked the wrong time. I'm blown away.
And I think here's the fundamental thing that Gaetz missed. Matt Gaetz missed this. There's a difference between starting a war, asking Congress for permission, which is necessary to fund a war,
and taking
out a terrorist or a single action.
Yeah.
See, this is the problem with our federal government. They didn't have the kahunas to stand up to Iran years ago, which created this problem. You cannot pay off terrorists. You cannot ignore them and think they're going to go away. No, they just grow. They use your money to grow, and then they kill you with your own money.
Yeah.
That's fact. If you have somebody who's a terrorist, and you know what? I didn't see Matt Gaetz saying the same thing when we took out al-Baghdadi, or he took himself out, but we went in for him. Right. I didn't see the same thing happen when we took out Osama bin Laden. If you are a known terrorist, and this is a bad man, this man caused 603 known deaths of Americans, thousands and thousands and thousands of regional people, and I'm talking Iraqis and Iranians and
Syrians.
Yeah, you just keep on going down the list. This is a bad, bad man. My barber, he's from Turkey. He came to my defense because, of course, I was on Facebook, like always, and arguing with people on this whole Soleimani thing, and he goes, you don't understand. I'm from there. I live there. We live in fear of this man.
Mm-hmm.
The world's better off, and we're better off. My family's safer today because he's gone. And you can find him at Deluxe Barber Shop in Wyandotte, Michigan.
There you go!
Little one for you there, Abe.
Maybe I'll go down and get a haircut.
He's amazing.
Where's he at, Lincoln Park?
Nope, he's in Wyandotte on Maple Street, Deluxe Barber Shop, best barber around. I mean, takes care of my beard, and that's a big deal for me, this beard. But Abe's simply amazing. He's the real American dream.
Abe?
Abe. Yep.
Abe. Maybe I'll go to see him.
Go see Abe at Deluxe. Yeah. He's amazing. He owns this barbershop.
Yeah.
I met him years ago working for someone else. Came to America, and I guess he fell in love with the idea of America working in Iraqi barbershops for the military, which is awesome. But came here, started a business. He's doing extremely well. But man, this guy just loves to be in America. Every day he tells me that I go in there. He's, what are you doing, Ash? How's the shows going? What are you doing? What do you got going on? He talks politics with me.
Right.
He just loves America. Talk to another guy who's, his name's Pierre, and he's a karate guy, and he owns a gym in Warren, and he came on board with me and Alan. Now, he's from this little itty-bitty country in Africa. But he says, I'm from there, but that's not my home. America's my home.
Yeah.
And but we're the party of anti-immigration, and this is the what we're always being told.
Which drives me crazy, right? We are not. We love immigrants. We love legal immigrants.
But you want to come here and assimilate to our ways. You don't want to come here and change our ways.
Yes.
And let me ask you this. Why would you want to come here and fundamentally change us to what you're fleeing from back home?
Exactly.
I don't understand that.
That's the same home concept of all these people leaving New York, leaving California, going to Texas and Florida, and trying to vote Democrat. Don't do it. You already screwed up your state. You're leaving your state because you're screwed up.
You're fleeing your own resolve there, right?
Yes.
You voted for that. You wanted it. And then it's like, oh, this is hurting me. I'm going to go move over here and then try to fundamentally change over there.
These are the people that soil their own nest, and then they come down here to your nest and want to soil that too. Come on, man.
Well, I mean, that's socialism, right?
Like, that is socialism.
If you have it and it's nicer than mine, then I want a piece of that, and you should give it to me because you know why? I'm your neighbor.
All right, so we're almost done with the show. I want you to give a shout out for your Twitter and your Facebook so people can get hold of you.
All right, you can find me. My page is The Ash Hampton Show. You can find that Ash Hampton Show, or at Ash Hampton Show is my Twitter feed. And then I would also implore you to check out Alan Hoover's. That's Hoover_8 on Twitter, or Alan Hoover for Congress 2020 on Facebook. And again, get involved. If you guys want to follow me, that's great. But more importantly, get involved. And you don't have to live in Alan's district to support Alan. We need a literal army to take on the deep state and Alyssa Slotkin.
Yeah.
And Alan's the only person that can do it. He may not win the nomination. That's a fact. That's how these things roll. But I'll tell you this, no other Republican is going to beat that deep state operative. She's going to wipe the floor with him the same way she did Mike Bishop, who was very seasoned in his message. The problem was, she was able to say, what are you talking about? What do you know about the Middle East? I was there. Well, you know what? Alan Hoover was there, and he did a lot more than she did, and he's the only one that's going to be able to take her on. So check him out more than me right now. I mean, I always love followers. I'm a big fan, and I try to interact with you guys as much as humanly possible. Right now, my mission is so much more important. I'm trying to restore your voice in Congress, and the conduit to do that is Alan Hoover.
Sweet. All right. Well, Ash, thanks so much for coming down. And
it's been a
coming
pleasure.
Up and being on the show. Love having you. We'll have to get Alan Hoover on again. And I'm going to try and get some of the other candidates on and give them their shot, too, so we can all get a nice balanced mix and look at them before it's all. God, I can't believe it's the primary is August already.
Yeah, it's coming up. It's right around the corner. And hey, listen, I want you to get these people on. And I think they're all great people. I have nothing to say.
Yeah.
Our campaign is not looking at political opposition research on these other Republicans. Why? Because we know that Alan's message is the only one that can beat Alyssa Slotkin. We're not concerned with them. They're great patriots. They see the same problems we see. The difference is who can get over the goal line, and that's Alan Hoover.
Exactly. All right. Well, until next week, go to thedailydrift.com. That's www.thedailydrift.com. It's the news you need to know. And make sure you're checking me out on Facebook, Gary Wellings, thedailydrift.com. And you'll also find me on Twitter at Gary Daily Drift, and on Parler at Gary Daily Drift, and on Gab at Gary Daily Drift. Pretty easy to find, right? Easiest guy in show business to find anywhere. So thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you up at the next show. Take care.